and welcome to episode number 39 of Girl Fight. My name is Nicole Tanner, and I am your host. Today, I am joined by Megan Sullivan.
Na 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 Girl Fight. That is the third time I've sung that in 10 minutes.
Yes, we've been having technical difficulties, which seem to be worked out now. Hopefully, fingers crossed. And I'm also joined by Audrey Drake.
Hey, everyone. I'm here too.
So, couple housekeeping things. Thanks to Megan for posting on her blog asking for feedback on Girl Fight, and thanks to everybody who responded there. And also on our Facebook page, we really, really appreciate all of the feedback, and we're trying to incorporate as much of it as possible. One of the feedback complaints was, it's not so great when there are only three of you here, which is the case today as well. I don't know what to say about that. We try. We really, really do. And sometimes it comes down to the fact of, okay, we record with three of us, or we don't record an episode. So
exactly. And everyone's really busy this week with GDC coming up, and everyone's part of different departments. I'm database, Jess is video.
It's really, really, really difficult to kind of make it work.
So please don't be mad at us.
Don't be mad. Yeah. We have something awesome coming up for you in like 10 seconds. So stay tuned.
One of the other feedback, which actually has been feedback going on for a long time, is sound levels. We are aware that there are issues. I'm doing my best to fix them. And if I am not able to do that on my own, then I will ask one of the boys what tricks they do, maybe, to see what we can make it work. But I'm going to try something different today when I edit. So hopefully that will fix the issues.
Yes.
And finally, other feedback was, why don't you guys give away more stuff?
Which is an excellent segue, because we have lots of things to give away today, listeners.
Yay.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, so our lovely friends at BioWare sent us a lot of
swag,
ladies-sized shirts and hoodies, and Megan's going to go down the list of everything that we've got here.
We do, and if you want one of these, we have a trivia question coming up, but first I'm going to tell you what lovely prizes you can win. Thank you to BioWare and the lovely people at Treehouse Brand Stores. So first on our list is a Mass Effect 2 N7 Fancy Ladies t-shirt in a small. Second, we have Mass Effect 2 Ladies N7 Armor Stripe t-shirt. Color is charcoal and the size is large. We have Mass Effect Shepherd's Ladies Tee Black in a small. We have Mass Effect Shepherd's Ladies Tee Black in a medium. We have an adorable Dragon Age Save the Nug Ladies V-neck Tee Black in a medium. We have a Mass Effect 2 N7 Fancy Ladies Thermal Long Sleeve Black in a small and a medium. We have a Mass Effect 2 N7 Armor Stripe Ladies t-shirt in a small, color is black. We have a Mass Effect N7 Ladies Thermal Hoodie Black in a large. We have a fantastic Dragon Age Ladies Warden's Crest Thermal Black in a medium. And finally, we have N7 Armor Stripe Ladies Hoodie Medium. You can see all of these on BioWare's store, and write in and let us know which one you want if you can answer the following trivia question.
Do, 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 do.
Exactly. What is the pet nickname that Thane gives FemShep in Mass Effect 2? What is the nickname he gives her in Mass Effect 2, and what does it mean?
Okay, cool. So you can send those answers to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com, again, along with which of the shirts that you would prefer, also the size.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we can't ship this stuff overseas. So sorry to our international listeners, but this one is going to have to be U.S. only.
We're going to try to get codes and stuff in the future, because we have a lot of international fans. You guys are really amazing, and we don't want to leave you guys out. So we promise there's more to come.
Yeah. And I also have a giveaway as well, maybe more for the guys. Sony sent me a bag of Killzone 3 Army Men. So they're in the Hellgast form. There's like, I don't know how many. There's like 8 or 10 of them. So if you're interested in winning that, again, U.S. only, apologies, just send a story about you playing with toys when you were little, whether it be Army Men or G.I. Joes or...
Barbie.
Or Barbie.
Yeah. I had an army of Barbies. I had 50 of them, and they went against my brother's plastic army troops and G.I. Joe. And every time I won by sheer numbers.
Nice. It's terrifying.
Yes, and also if you just take their clothes off, the Army Men will be very happy with your naked Barbies.
Yeah, Barbie's like 3 times bigger than
yeah,
Army
that
Men
too. So it's just going to kind of crush them, you know, with Barbie's car or
maybe
horse or whatever.
Maybe that's the secret to world peace. Just send a bunch of Barbies and no one will remember to fight anymore.
Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, so those are our contests. So send stuff into IGNGirlFight@gmail.com and we will pick the winners based on correct answer to the trivia question and then a random drawing. And as far as the Army Men story, we'll pick which one we think is the best.
Yep, exactly.
And we'll announce the winners on, not next week, because we won't be doing a podcast next week because of GDC, but the following week we will announce the winners. So there's that. And a quick shout out from Girl Fight fan Dammy. This is probably really, really late, but apologies. He wanted to wish his wife Michelle a happy 5-year wedding anniversary and thank her for being supportive of his gaming habit. He says she is the Liara to my Shepherd.
Not a Tali fan, but that's okay. Liara's cool too.
So congratulations, Dammy and Michelle. Sorry if it's a little late.
Yes.
I just ran across the email again today. All right. Now with all that stuff out of the way, let's talk about what we're playing. Megan, do you want to start?
Sure. Okay. So I'm trying to get all the Mass Effect DLC out of the way because Dragon Age 2 is coming up March 8th, and I want to get all geared up to play that. Also downloaded Xenogears last night, or tried to until my PSN connection got cut off. But I am curious to see if this game is as legendary and epic as everyone says it is. Because I played Xenosaga and was kind of like, eh. But everyone says that Xenogears is like one of the best JRPGs ever. I've played 87 JRPGs in my lifetime, so it's got some stiff competition, but we will see.
I love the fact that you've counted how many
I actually have a list on my computer of all the RPGs I've ever played, and I'm hitting 90 pretty soon. My goal for 2011 is to actually be able to say I've played 100 RPGs.
Is it all the ones you've beat or just the ones you've played?
These are the ones I've played. Like, some of them weren't good enough to even bother with. Others, I don't even know why I finished them in the first place.
Right.
But yeah, just to say that I've played them. So...
cool.
Well, how about you, Audrey?
I had something of a gaming smorgasbord over the weekend. I jumped around. I played Okamiden, which I'm actually reviewing. The review will go up early next month. I played some Smash Bros, which I know I've been addicted to it. I've been talking about it all the time. I'm sorry. I played a little Marvel vs. Capcom 3, a little Dead Space, and I actually threw on a little Wind Waker in honor of Zelda's 25th.
Nice. So,
oh, very nice. Yep.
I haven't been playing a whole lot, as everybody should know at this point. I am expecting a little gamer girl, and this little gamer girl is not currently being very nice to me. So I spent the weekend very ill, so I didn't play hardly anything. And then on top of that, my mother-in-law is in town, so my evenings are pretty much taken up. But what I have been playing is actually a game on Facebook that I would encourage everybody to check out. Even if you hate Facebook games, this does not play like a Facebook game. It's called Buddy Rush.
Buddy Rush.
And it plays like an MMO. So it's an action game. You've got your default attack and you've got your skills that you can activate, and then they have cooldown periods. But it's really cute. It's got like a tongue-in-cheek sense of humor type thing. Like,
What is the story?
As far as I can tell right now, they're called oblins, not goblins, but they're like goblins.
Some sort of copyright issue?
I don't know. But they're like, you know, attacking the city, and you've got different types of quests. Sometimes you're going out and fighting these goblins. Sometimes you're going out fetching herbs and fruit and things of that nature, or looking for water. I'm not very far in the game. But the characters are kind of cute and funny. Like, the one character that I have is called Akiyu, And her name comes from the fact that her dad like wanted to kill her when she was little. So it's like,
oh, I kill you.
Jeez. So, but yeah, she's this little Chinese girl with two meat cleavers. And so, and all the characters kind of have that cute little.
Well, now I have to check this game out.
Yeah, it's also, it's got fantastic graphics, some of the best graphics I have seen in a Facebook game. Huh. And, you know, you are actually controlling your player, walking them along, and it scrolls very smoothly. And I mean, I can't say enough good about this.
Who made the game?
I think it's a company that I actually hadn't heard of before. I think it's Solium or Solum. I'm sorry if I said that wrong, but I'll be writing something about it on IGN in the next week or so, depending upon my GDC schedule. But it's super cool, and I suggest people try it out. This is really, I mean, and I've said this before, but Facebook games are evolving at a pace that is absolutely unbelievable when you think of how long it took us to evolve from arcade games to where we are now. Facebook games have done that in basically the last year and a half. So this is the best example I have seen thus far of a real quote-unquote game
that's actually Facebook. Featured on Facebook. And yeah. I know Jess isn't here, but I saw her Facebook update last night. Apparently she is loving the Dragon Age 2 demo. Yeah. So if you guys haven't downloaded it, I guess it's a good thing that you do. But if you're like me, you've already ordered your signature edition and you're really super stoked about it.
Yeah, that's not the kind of game I would download a demo for. You know, it's just kind
of... Well, I got to play it at PAX, so I was like, I'm done. I'm going to buy it. I enjoyed it. So I don't need to do the demo, but if you're kind of on the fence, I've heard really good feedback from people who didn't like the first game as much as I did, and they really seem to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, good times.
Cool. All right. So that's what we're playing. So we're going to talk about a couple of topics this week. The first of which, we'll do the lighthearted one first before we get into the serious one. As Audrey mentioned, Zelda celebrated 25th anniversary this week.
Wow. Someone had to.
Exactly.
Well, obviously, I think we're all in agreement. Probably one of the greatest franchises, if not the greatest franchise in gaming.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, how many Zelda games have you played? Have you played them all?
I've played them all, yeah.
Okay.
You've literally played them all?
Literally, beginning to end. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is impressive.
Yeah.
I played the first three games. I'm still kind of trying to get through Ocarina of Time. Because there's so much to explore, there's so much to do in that game. Mm-hmm. Are you looking forward to Skyward Sword?
I am looking forward to Skyward Sword. I know a lot of people are very skeptical about it for some reasons, some very good reasons, but
including that horrible E3 demo.
That horrible demo, actually.
Just bad.
I felt so bad for Miyamoto.
Yeah. I thought he looked like he kind of wanted to sink under the floor. I swear to God, this game works.
It's such a shame because everyone who actually, I didn't get it, I wasn't there, but everyone who actually got their hands on it actually said that it worked beautifully, so it's a real shame that its debut to the world was so sucky, because you know, I hear the controls are actually really good, and I'm excited because it looks like they're bringing the enemies back to sort of more strategic, like they were in sort of the older games. Like there's one of the enemies that reminds me of someone from Zelda 2, actually. Which is that one of the ones you've played?
Yes, I played
the guy who like raises his shield up and down, and you have to sort of coordinate with
that. That guy.
There's some of the guys they've showed in the trailers who look like that. So I'm really excited if it's going to be more strategic.
I'm
excited.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite of Megan. I've played the more recent ones, but not the super old ones. So the oldest one that I've played is Ocarina of Time, and then I also played Wind Waker and Spirit Tracks on DS, and also Twilight Princess, which I didn't finish. I got bored with it, honestly.
How long did you get into it? Because like the beginning is, I'll give that. It's a beautiful game. I really love that game, but the beginning is terribly slow.
Yeah.
So when you recommend it to people, you have to say, just get through the beginning and it picks up.
Yeah, I got, I think, to right to the part where you can start to transform into a wolf.
Oh, yeah. You know, you needed
had to push through
it
a little
longer. It picks up after that. No, it's too slow to start, but it actually, it's a really great game once you get past the intro sort of part.
Ocarina of Time, I love. That's one of my favorite games.
I actually downloaded the original game a few months back, and I've forgotten how hard the original game is. I got completely lost to looking for this one dungeon. I'd forgotten how hard it is to find these things. It's like, where the heck do I go? I'm just going in a circle.
Yeah.
Man.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's I love that about those games. Yeah. Even going back, though, I sort of remember where everything is, so it's not as big of a where the hell is it challenge as for people who are just now trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ocarina, I think, is probably one of the most massive games I've ever played, for sure.
There's so much to do, so much to look at.
Yeah.
So many people to talk to.
I can't find all the stupid spiders. It's driving me crazy.
You're never going to get the big wallet then.
I know. I want the big wallet. I'm just like, dang, where are these things?
That's one thing that makes me bad Ocarina is I get all of these juicy rupees, but they go to waste because I don't have a big enough wallet at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
It kills me to watch a rupee go to waste. So.
Yeah. Ocarina is kind of special for me in a couple of ways. First of all, when I first started dating my husband, for the first Valentine's Day that we spent together, I bought him an N64 and Ocarina of Time. Nice. Because that's what he wanted.
Best girlfriend ever, right?
I know, yes, exactly. So, and I tried playing it at that time, but at that time I was still like not so much up and up on 3D gaming, and I was kind of like, ugh, I can't do this. I tried it, but I can't do it. But I went back to it after I started working at Game Now, which is when they re-released it for the GameCube. And then I played through the whole thing and absolutely loved it. And it also spawned what has become a very huge joke between my husband and I. I was playing it and I was battling one of the bosses. I forget what it was. So I was down to like half a heart of health and I'm busting the pot and rupees came out instead of health. And I just yelled really loud, "Rupees!" And so now anytime either my husband or I are having trouble in a game or it does something like that, like gives you money instead of health, we always just yell, "Rupees!"
Nice.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That is really cute. It's amazing how like special people like people hold this entire series up on a pedestal. I remember going to the video game, like what the heck is it called? The music concert, the live musical, Video Games Live. And, one of my former coworkers, who's still my friend, just got chills listening to the Zelda theme live.
Oh, God. The music Koji Kondo did for all of those games is just amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And everyone knows it. And so it's amazing that it conjures up such feelings, and which is why we still get angry email about our April Fool's trailer for Zelda. We still get that to this day. Why did you do that? That was horrible. My 6-year-old son really wanted to see that. Sorry, guys. It seemed funny at the time.
Yeah,
but that music still holds up to this day. Anyone who hasn't listened to a CD called Mario and Zelda Big Band Live, go out and order it or find it because it is just gorgeous. They do an arrangement of sort of random songs from the Mario and Zelda series, and a couple of them from Wind Waker are just chilling. They're gorgeous.
Cool. So.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Speaking of Wind Waker, what were your thoughts when the cartoony style was first unveiled?
I actually just wrote an article about this. You know what? Ocarina of Time, I've said it a zillion, million times before. It's tied for one of my favorite games of all time with The Link to the Past. And when I first saw the Wind Waker graphics, it was not what I was expecting or wanting from the next Zelda game. I wanted it to just be like this epic adventure where I was going to just slice and dice. Yeah. And I don't know, not really. I wasn't expecting anything from Zelda that it isn't, but I just expected it to be more realistic because I thought that's the way it was going after Ocarina.
Yeah.
But so I was very skeptical and even downright angry towards it. But then I actually came around. I pre-ordered it, of course. And when I played it, I was pleasantly surprised that I had been a little too quick to judge. And it actually took me a few years to sort of get over all of the negative feelings I had towards it. But I did, and now it's just a really lovely experience.
Yeah. I was working at Game Now when that art reveal came, and everybody was like, what? Because I think before they had actually shown something.
Yeah, it's Space
with, like,
World.
An adult Link
they had,
kind of
yeah.
thing. And then at E3 or something, they just pulled out this cartoony stuff. And
well, I think it's Space World 2000. I think that was the year. They showed this image, like you said, of a realistic Link going up against this sort of more realistic Ganon.
Yeah.
And then the next year, boom, we were sort of shown the Wind Waker style instead. And no one was expecting it.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting, though, because Skyward Sword seems to be trying to tightrope a little bit, like do this tightrope walk between sort of anime-ish and cartoonish, but still very kind of like the adult Link, which I thought was interesting. I noticed some people are kind of divided about that.
Yeah, it's funny because I brought this up in that article. It's having sort of a similar reaction than people had when they first heard about Wind Waker. It's very negative towards the art style. It's not what they wanted from the next, you know, the follow-up to Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think the art style in Skyward Sword is actually really beautiful, and it's a really smart way to make the best of the Wii's hardware. You know what I mean? I mean, they're never going to be able to pull off like a PS3 looking game on a Wii, but this is a really artistic and very Zelda way to do it and have an expansive world that's very different looking. So I'm excited.
Yeah. At the time when Wind Waker came out, like I said, hadn't really played much of anything, so I wasn't, like, committed to, like, oh my god, I wanted it to be... I actually really liked the Wind Waker art. I thought it was freaking adorable.
Yeah.
And my husband was, like ready to, you know, blow steam out of his ears when he saw it. And I'm like, what's wrong with it? It's cute!
It's so funny, because it's mostly the Zelda fans, the hardcore Zelda fans, who had the biggest problem with it.
Yeah.
So, it's really
funny. I remember
seeing
it in a magazine at, like, a Payless or something, and being like, nope! Because I liked this sort of adult. I was like a Link to the Past, or not a Link to the Past, but a Link's Adventure, where it's just like, you know, sort of a more grown up Link kind of style. So I remember seeing that and being like, it's a cartoon.
Yeah, it's funny because that's how I felt too. You know, I wanted something in line with Ocarina or some of the original ones where it was trying to be realistic for the system. But when you really look back and think about it, it's sort of always been kind of cartoony. Like, I mean, a Link in A Link to the Past, you know, he's like a little cute, cartoony, chibi guy, you know what I mean? And the artwork for Ocarina, it is more realistic, but it's also very vibrant and colorful. And I just don't think it was ever meant to be what people are wanting it to be sometimes. Like, I don't think they ever intended for it to be this really realistic world. I think they always want it to be grounded in sort of the fantastic, which really works for the world.
Yep.
So
the other thing I really, really loved about Wind Waker was kind of the transformation of Zelda herself. She was no longer just a princess that you went and saw and, you know, she asked you to save the country or whatever, but I like that she took a more active role.
Yeah. I've always really respected the character of Zelda. I mean, I'm sure we've discussed here, but there aren't very many video game girl characters you can sort of look up to, but she's really strong. Like, even in back in the old games, you know, she never came off as like an airhead or anything like some other princesses, but
that shall be
I'm on vacation. But anyway, and like in Ocarina, even before Wind Waker, you know, she was just, you know, I hate to spoil, but everyone's probably already played the game at this point.
Well,
but
I hope so at this point.
She's chic, you know, you find out at the end of the game and you're like, wow, she's this woman, but she's also this really strong character who Link couldn't really have done any of this without. And in Twilight Princess, you know, she... you could say that Link's the one sort of rescuing her kingdom, but they sort of show that it's more complex than that. She had to make really hard decisions and that she's trying to be really strong for her people. So, I don't know. She's a really cool character.
Yeah. I liked the pirate aspect in Wind Waker and the fact that she didn't know who she was, even though it's completely obvious to anybody who's playing.
It's like, oh, okay. No, she was adorable being a little tomboy pirate.
Yeah,
so
bossing
cute.
All those big pirate guys around. It's hilarious. So, yes, those are our fond memories of Zelda. And for all of you people complaining that we don't talk about Nintendo stuff enough, there. Yep. We've done it.
Yep. Everyone go break some pots and smack some chickens with a sword to celebrate.
Oh, man, 25 years of just abusing chickens. Yes. Think about that.
Sorry, PETA.
Yeah. All right, so we've got another topic we're going to touch on a little bit, and this one is much more serious. So there's a story that ran on IGN, I believe it was yesterday, that said the Ministry of Information and Communication in Vietnam has called for a nightly ban of online gaming across the country. And the request was made to internet service providers
demanding a block on access to online games every day from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. And if the ISPs don't comply with this, basically they're going to be shut down. They're not going to be able to do any business in Vietnam. And
with everything going on in the world right now, this didn't seem like the best time for them to bust that out. Because all over the Middle East, everywhere from, you know, obviously Tunisia and Egypt and now Libya and what's happening in Yemen. And it's just, it's going all over the place.
It seems so trivial.
And, you know, China and Korea and all of these Asian countries, online gaming is a big deal.
Yeah, so it's giant over there.
Huge. Yeah. And so when you take this away from young people, you're just pushing buttons you don't want to push. You can only cloak what's going on in the world so far because, you know, the perfect example, again, Egypt with Facebook and Twitter and everything like that. Yeah. Information is getting out there. Mm-hmm. And so when you start trying to take it away, I think you're just pushing the younger generation to basically revolt. They're not going to want to put up with this. So I think they think they're, you know, helping people like a responsible parent, but they're trying. You're just not doing this the right way.
That's ridiculous. I mean, like I said, people should be free to sort of decide what they input into their own brains, you know? Yeah. If they want to play hours and hours of online MMOs, you know, maybe it's not the healthiest thing to do or not, but that's not really anyone's call to make.
Communist Vietnam, they think it is. It's interesting to see if this will spread to other Asian cultures and a place like China that really could be dangerous because they do have access to information and they have had showdowns with their government. So it'll be interesting to see if this actually is a catalyst for change in Asia. It seems so small and trivial, but people always underestimate how important gaming culture is all over the world.
Well, I mean, I think it's online, like 25% of the population like actively use the internet like on a daily basis there. So it's not going to go unnoticed. It's going to be huge. People are not going to be happy.
Yeah.
I mean, I totally disagree with it as well, but I do just want to bring up that the whole gaming addiction thing seems to be much more serious over there in the Asian countries than it is over here. I mean, there's been numerous stories of people just collapsing at their computers from not eating and, you know, doing all that stuff. So I think the intention is always good and it comes from a misunderstanding of games and what gaming is.
So. It's true. You've heard some terrible stories about, especially in those countries, of what some people have done for their gaming addictions. Yeah. But I don't think you can blame a whole country of people, of internet users, for the mistakes that some very extreme people have made.
And that's what I'm saying, is that there are people who do collapse and they do die. But at the same time, the majority of gamers are being punished for other people's addictions. And I think that's going to...
Something's going to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This kind of relates a little bit to, I think it was it South Korea? It was one of the Koreas. Some news channel was like trying to prove the link between gaming and violence. And so they went to an internet cafe where everybody was playing.
I'm thinking South Korea. I don't think they have internet cafes in North Korea.
That's right. It probably was South Korea.
Unless
anyhow,
Kim Jong-il himself was just like, yeah.
These people went in and basically just shut off the power to all the PCs, and obviously the people playing got mad.
Yeah.
And they're like, look, they're becoming violent, just like the characters they portray.
Well, it's like, go to a sports bar in the middle of a big game and unplug
turn off the TV
and see what happens.
Yeah, okay? No kidding. There will be blood.
I mean, you know, in internet cafes, they pay to use the internet there. So you're like, you're shutting off something that they're paying for.
So you're not only making the players mad, you're making the businesses mad because they're like, hey, that's our income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but... I just thought that was an amusing attempt from the news media to kind of link gaming to violence. Makes me laugh.
It does. But, you know, we do it all the time here. It's just, you know, what does Fox News have a problem with now? If it wasn't Mass Effect, it's, you know, all these violent games and shooting. And it's just, it's such specious reasoning. It's so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know... I feel like we had this discussion with movies in the 80s, RoboCop and Terminator. And
heck, we had this discussion with some books a long time ago.
Rap music or in video games.
Or any music for that matter, Elvis. Elvis was supposedly going to increase teenage pregnancies.
But now you look back and you're like, wow, Elvis was so tame.
Yeah, really. It just baffles me.
And to be a little bit on the fair side. It isn't only Fox News that does it, because we actually got a lot of people writing in being like, why are you guys always ragging on Fox News?
And because they're an easy target. Yeah. Tide goes in, tide goes out. You can't explain that.
Oh, that's you. Megan, by the way. So if you still want to complain, you can
bring it.
Yeah, send it directly to her. But no, other media doesn't understand games either. It's just that Fox seems to report on them more salaciously, I think, than other media outlets do. And that's kind of why we focused on it. But you know what? MSNBC or somebody like that puts up a stupid story, we'll ream them too.
Yeah, so. No, seriously. Because there is a lot of fear mongering, and it's just, you know, with entertainment news, they've got to have something. So, you know, the law that was introduced in California, the low hanging fruit, was a Democrat, right? I can't think of his name.
Leland Yee.
There he is. So, I mean, it is coming from all sides and all channels. And
speaking of which, the Supreme Court is supposed to be issuing at least one decision from their last hearing period, whatever that's called, this week. So we don't know whether it will be the gaming one, but it could be.
So keep your ears open.
Yeah, keep your ears open for that. Basically, you know, governments that try to control people are bad. That sums it up.
That definitely does sum it up. And it'll be interesting to see if anything.
How it all plays out.
Yeah, how it all plays out.
Yeah.
Only it's not going to play out after 10 and before 8.
Oh, yeah. Not if Vietnam gets its way.
Yeah. That's a ridiculous time frame, too. You know,
I guess they're trying to get the people who are addicted who do play all night, but still.
But they play all day as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of arbitrary.
It's like, okay, I'll just start sleeping at night and just play all day.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. I think the only people that is hurting are like the working people who come home and play for a couple hours at night and only do that. It's, you know, it's really only the casual people that are going to be affected by that. The hardcore ones can just play during the day.
Yep.
So,
I think that wasn't that their whole problem, that everyone's playing it all day.
Yeah seriously. Well.
Yeah. Okay. So, we'll keep an eye on that story and see how things develop. So now we're going to move on to questions. If you have questions, you can send those to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. First question is actually a little bit related to our giveaway. It comes to us from Jasmine. She says that there doesn't seem to be much love for the girl gamer when it comes to apparel for our favorite game. She wants to know if we care about that, or is she the only one? No, we definitely care. And
we've got 11 items to prove it.
Yeah. BioWare cares.
BioWare cares.
Although it took them a while to add ladies' stuff.
Yeah, I will say that has always bothered me because I, like I said, I've been gaming since I was very little, and I have very few gaming shirts actually, because whenever I like get one for free or I buy one, they're always in guys' sizes and they're always giant.
Yeah. You know? Occasionally you would find something at Hot Topic back in the day.
Yeah, even then you have to shrink it down so much because I don't know, I'm 5'4", I'm a small girl, so it's just it pisses me off because I want to wear the cool shirts too.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to buy kid sizes at Hot Topic.
Yeah, I've done that too. Like at Walmart, they have kid sizes of some video game stuff, and that's where I get a lot of it.
Yeah, and all my giant shirts are used for nightgowns.
Yeah, that's what I use it for.
I have so many video game night shirts.
You never know I was a video game fan unless you saw me in my pajamas, basically. Right.
All right, next question comes to us from Megan. Megan, another Megan who spells her name the same way as you.
Oh, finally. I've seen it spelled every way but mine. I saw one spelled M-E-G-G-A-A-N. I think there's someone on, I think it is Fox News, Megan M-E-G-Y-N. It's hard to find an M-E-G-H-A-N.
Yeah, so this is another Megan with an H.
It's not from you, is it?
No. Oh, I'll never tell.
She writes, for those of us who like to combine our bookworm and gamer sides, have any of you run across books that incorporate gaming as a major part of the plot or subject matter? That's a hard one. I read lots of books, too, but
I recommend it on my blog. If you like such and such games, you should read such and such books. But I've never read a book that actually incorporates gaming in
Yeah, yeah. And there's some great books that have like analyzed the industry and trends and stuff.
There's lots
that
are of nonfiction,
but as for fiction, I don't think I've come across anything. No.
Yeah, I mean the closest thing I could think, it's not a book, but there was a movie recently which was it was okay, it wasn't fantastic, but it was called Gamer, and it was basically about this competition where they would take convicts, and someone on the outside would control them like they were controlling a game avatar, and they would like battle to the death.
Were they connected to a D-pad or?
Yeah,
okay. they had something implanted like in the back of their head that gave them, and it was like all futuristic, so there wasn't a controller. It was like a Kinect style. That's how they control it. But that actually had gaming as a very central part of it. And it wasn't terrible. I mean, it wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't terrible either. So you might want to check that out. Next question comes to us from Jessica. Yeah, questions from the ladies today. I did not plan
that.
The
next question's from Audrey.
Yeah. So she wants to know if any of us follow the video review series Zero Punctuation, and if so, what do we think of it?
Oh, I love Zero Punctuation. It cracks me up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
I tune in every week, and I just think it's nice to have that kind of different opinion. Yes, it's a little snarky, but it's the argument is always really well done, and enjoy.
Cool. I actually haven't seen many of them. What I have seen has been pretty entertaining, to say the least. All right, next question comes to us from Walt. Walt is expecting his first child.
Congratulations,
Walt. And he wants to know what games, movies, or other pop culture items would we most look forward to sharing with our kids, whether they be real or hypothetical future things.
Does my kitty count? No.
Can your kitty game?
Yeah, she likes to bat at the silhouettes of the fish in Animal Crossing.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Active gamer, there you go.
Yes.
Yeah. God. Everything.
Everything, right?
Yeah, for me. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to be sharing, like, Mass Effect or Dragon Age or anything that is terribly violent with a child when they're very small. But, you know, I really hope that I am able to instill the kind of love of games and also books in my child when she is born. But I guess we'll just have to see. Hopefully, she won't rebel and like pink and want to be a Disney princess and all that good stuff. We'll see. That's probably what I've got coming.
Just compromise and give her Kingdom Hearts.
Right.
Oh, good idea. There you go.
I'm not against all Disney. It's just the princess parts.
I don't know. I liked the princesses growing up, but it didn't, you know, stop me from going on to higher education and having a brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Bratz dolls, however, those are a little worrisome.
Yeah.
Those are just terrifying to look at.
Terrifying. They're just all slutty and too much makeup. And,
and I was like, wait, I thought these little dolls were supposed to be like little six-year-olds or something.
Yeah, it's, you're just like, whoa, what happened
there? Going to the club.
Clubbing at the age of six. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Next question comes to us from no name, but there is a username Swagger Midkiff. Wants to know what our stance is on new developers picking up a franchise a la Bioshock 2 being developed by a different team and Fallout New Vegas being developed by a different team. Would we rather there be no sequel until the original gets back on board, or would you rather no sequel at all? How do we feel about that?
I guess it depends on how the particular scenario, the developer handles it. Like, that's like HAL Labs didn't make the Kirby game that just came out, Kirby's Epic Yarn, but it was a really good game still. But I am glad that the original developer still is going to be making another one.
Yeah.
So I think if they handle it well, then it's a good thing, obviously. But I guess it's best case scenario if the original developer.
Because I love Kirby's Epic Yarn. I thought that game was awesome.
It was a great game.
Yeah.
But it's also cool that they're... the original creator is going to get to come back and have him sucking up powers again.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just case by case.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of times too, what happens is, the original team, like they want to do something else. They want to do something else new. And the publisher, there is a difference between developers and publishers. Publisher wants to keep making the successful stuff because it makes money. So lots of times that's why things kind of get tossed over mm-hmm. to a new developer. And, you know, Bioshock 2 was not as good as the first Bioshock, in my opinion. But then again, like, from my point of view, like, it would have been extremely hard for anybody to top the first Bioshock. And Fallout's kind of the same way. Like, it would have been really hard for Fallout New Vegas to be better than Fallout 3, in my opinion. So, lots of times those people are just cursed with having a lot to live up to.
Yeah,
and it's really, really difficult.
It is cool to sometimes see different people's take on a franchise. Yeah. So
it'll be interesting to see the new DMC Devil May Cry, because Ninja Theory's really doing interesting. That will be interesting. So we'll see.
And what do you think of that, Megan?
I don't know. I'm a DMC fan. I was surprised. I like Ninja Theory, but mm-hmm. I'm a little frustrated because every time their games have such potential, but the gameplay never quite comes together. Mm-hmm. So if they can get the gameplay of DMC, which is like really fun, if they can get that down, then everything else should come together. But
we just haven't seen enough of it yet.
We haven't seen enough of it. We've just seen Emo Dante. So that should be interesting.
Okay, next question comes to us from Chris. This is kind of a relationship question. Chris says he met a guy on Xbox Live. He's been playing with him regularly for about a year. And they met up in real life and, you know, kind of got a little romantic. And he says since then, his friend has claimed that he's made him confused about his sexuality. Chris himself is openly gay. He wants to know he just wants advice on what he should do. Should he keep trying to get in contact with this person? Should he forget about him? You know, all that kind of stuff. I think that's a touchy issue. I think you kind of have to, I wouldn't say like just stop contacting him altogether, but you definitely don't want to badger him.
And just follow his example, whatever he's doing. Like, if he seems like he's sort of getting uncomfortable or something, maybe, you know, back off a little. But if he seems like he's really welcoming your company or your dialogue or whatever,
sounds like this other person is struggling to sort of define themselves right now, which can be really difficult for people. You know, they don't want people to force them out, or they're still working through stuff. Yeah. So at this point, you might want to be patient and
give them space, but at the same time, don't
blow them off.
Don't just blow them off, exactly. Because either way, I don't think that would have a good effect.
Right. Yeah. I would say just, you know, and be supportive. Like, obviously, if he is homosexual or bisexual or whatever, you've been through that experience. Mm-hmm. So you probably would have advice to offer him if he needs it and if he asks for it. But don't, like, force it on him.
If it's something that you're able to do, I would say offer your friendship no matter what he decides, you know, because that would probably make him feel really good knowing that if he decides, you know, he doesn't want to pursue that, that he's not losing a friend.
Right. Okay, next question comes to us from...
Take that, knocking boots.
Yeah, I wonder how they would have answered that.
I don't think you want to know.
I don't want to know. Next question comes to us from Sam. Sam is high school graduate from Canada. She is starting college next year. She is torn between pursuing a career in the game industry or a research job in biology. So she thinks she could do both things fairly well. If she went into the game world, it would be art. And so, as girls working in the field, she just wanted to know what we think. She says she's often told in the gaming industry job market is extremely saturated and difficult to break into as an artist, which is true. I can speak firsthand, having done my share of booth work in the Career Pavilion at GDC many, many years. The ratio of artists to other types of people is huge. Unbelievably huge. If you were going into programming, you would not have nearly as much problem because everybody needs programmers like all the time. But the art, it is pretty saturated. She wants to know if being female would make it tougher to break. I don't think being a female
that it would have been a couple of decades ago. So that wouldn't be the issue.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it just really is oversaturated on the art side. Yeah. So,
but, you know, I don't know anything about the other field that she's going into, unfortunately, but I would say
the biology.
Yeah.
Biology. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
But, I don't know how hard it is to break into biology.
I don't know about biology. I would just say though, at the end of the day, make sure you do something that at the end of the day will make you happy and passionate about.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's just, you know, if art is where your passion is at, then you should pursue that in some way, even if that means going to school for a backup sort of thing while also pursuing your art, because that's sort of the kind of thing that you don't exactly need a degree for, as long as you have your you have training from somewhere, whether you learned yourself or whatever. So,
and also too, you know, the gaming industry is changing. There are so many places where you can just people can just one-man teams can develop games for the iPhone and, you know, things of that nature. So you know, we have actually an indie open house thing going here at IGN where we're giving office space to some indie developers. I sat on the panel that picked out who was going to be in there, and a lot of them are like one or two people. It's like a programmer and an artist. So, I mean, you have to kind of be willing to not make a lot of money right off the bat. But I think there's definitely opportunities if you're really good and if you're passionate.
And probably have an open mind about where you look for opportunities. Like, you're probably not going to be working for your favorite game company right away. So just look for whatever little opportunities you can find and then work your way up from there.
Yep. Okay. Next question comes to us from Brian. Brian wants us to recommend a game that he can play during, he says play in quotations, during work hours that requires very little time and that he can leave running in the background and maybe occasionally check in on.
Well, none of us ever play games at work. Exactly. Here, so.
Yeah. I'd be careful, because there's actually something in the news where bosses are getting to the point where they know people are goofing off and playing games, whether it just be solitaire or it's, you know, like a Facebook game. So I would highly recommend, unless you work in this industry, don't play games during work.
Or I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be this industry. I mean, if you work somewhere else that's laid back, then it's fine. And as far as recommendations, anything on Facebook will work.
Yeah.
You know, those are very short play sessions. Some of them, like, you have to wait a certain amount of time for something to happen anyhow. So it's perfect to just do what you can do and then leave and then come back. So
another thing I would recommend, it doesn't really fit in with his something to sort of play throughout the day. Yeah. But if, like, it's really important to you to get in some gaming during your work day, but you don't work at a place that's laid back enough to really be able to do it on your computer, I would say bring a handheld and, you know, do it during lunch.
iPhone games get in an easy hour to pop gaming. In and out of. Like, Angry Birds is very easy to just pop in and out of.
Use your iPhone, get a DS, get a PSP, you know, just get in a little hour of gaming. It could make all the difference.
So there you go.
Just don't get fired.
Okay,
Get fired.
Before I get into this next question, I don't think we... have you played WoW, Audrey?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so I'm going to save this for a time.
I haven't either.
When we have a WoW person on. Next question comes to us from Sam. Sam says there have been many games throughout the years that have changed the scene of gaming and left an impression on the industry players, obviously Zelda being one of them. Mm-hmm. He wants to know if we can think of any game in this generation that has had an effect similar to those, and if so, what the game is and how we think it will affect the industry in the coming years.
That's interesting. I would say games like a Mass Effect or Heavy Rain that are sort of more, I don't know, they adhere more to the Hollywood style. They're more focused on story.
Emotionally engaging.
I think that that's definitely a shift in gaming that has started to occur. I don't think it's going to replace traditional gameplay-centric gaming, because that's the heart of gaming, in my opinion. But it's definitely the start of something.
Right.
So I would give those games that.
Anything I think that has had a really great story, I'd throw BioShock into that thing as well. And Heavy Rain, I mean, despite its flaws, it's totally unique next to, like, everything this generation. So
And there's a lot of games I noticed that it used to be that you would just play the traditional hero, and now you have a lot of gray area where you can be Paragon, but you can be Rogue, or no matter what the decision is at the end of these games, someone's going to get sacrificed and you have to make that decision. Or in Heavy Rain, there's a lot of stuff going on. We have to make some really difficult decisions, and so it's interesting that it's sort of more adult content, and that it content that not everything is black and white. There's just all sorts of gray.
I mean, that's the other thing I think you can say about this generation too, is just that, you know, games are, for lack of a better term, growing up. Like, we've seen way more games this generation that are really aimed at adults
yeah.
than any other generation before.
Yeah. Red Dead Redemption really isn't a kid's game.
Yeah. I mean, neither is Mass Effect, neither is Dragon Age, neither is Heavy Rain, you know, Bioshock isn't either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a...
Yeah. Even in Japan, there are more M-rated games.
Than there were in the past.
Yeah, that there were in the past, you know, as opposed to either kids' game or hentai games, there's actually a more defined middle ground, it seems.
Yeah, it's there's definitely some segmentation occurring within game development towards making games that don't really focus on more mature themes. And I hate using that term. It's like, it's mature because it's bloody, but...
Well, it's not just that.
There's a difference between a game actually being mature and being rated mature.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a big distinction there.
Yeah.
Bulletstorm, being a perfect example. Okay. Oh my God, this is so funny. Next question comes from Nicole.
Wow, we have a running theme here.
And her question is, if there was a class on video games, not how to make or design them, but to analyze them, what video games would we pick to study and why?
Huh.
That's interesting.
That's a good question.
I guess there's a lot of good N64 titles. I'd choose Ocarina of Time and Super Mario 64 because those sort of set the standard for their genres, brought them into 3D, which informed the future of 3D gaming, essentially. So those would be really important ones to study.
Yeah, I would say Heavy Rain, just because of all of the options that you have. And
all the decisions.
Yeah, kind of, which is, I would be interested just to do this on my own if I had more time, which is just, you know, to go through and like make all the different decisions and see how things work out. And so
I think God of War would actually be a neat one as well. There's a lot going on, not just in terms of mythology and history, but Kratos is a mess, and he's just a case study and just, you know, anger and rage and pain. And it's kind of interesting that you finally play Ghost of Sparta and there's a little more of an explanation why he's the way he is.
Yeah.
So it's just, that would actually be interesting as well.
Yeah. Alrighty. Next question comes to us from Jan Michael. Sorry if I said that wrong. He says, if we were all characters in a video game that were important enough to have a theme song, what theme song would we want and why? And he's got a specification that, Megan, you have to pick a Japanese song.
Can you repeat the question so I understand it?
What would your gaming theme song be?
What would my gaming theme song be?
That's an interesting question. Yeah.
The first thing that popped in mind is Larkin CL's Ready, Steady, Go. It's a really exciting, like, vibrant, you know, kind of a, like an action theme. Okay. So there you
I
go.
Have no idea.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I know if I pick one later tonight, I'm going to be like, oh, how could I not have picked this other one?
Yeah.
The first one that pops into my head is Ballad of the Windfish from Link's Awakening. So that's what I'm going to choose.
Yeah.
Does it have to be from a video game or can it just be anything?
It just says... He just said he wanted you to pick a Japanese song.
If it's a video game, it would have to be the Final Fantasy theme. Yeah. So there you go.
I'd say if it's not a video game, I really like the intro Tank from Cowboy Bebop. That's an awesome song.
Oh, yeah. That's a good pick.
Yeah. The only thing I can think of is the God of War.
Yeah.
I like that one. Anyhow, next question comes to us from Nicola. As opposed to Nicole. She wants to know if we've ever cried while playing a video game.
Never cried in my life, no.
Yeah, that's what I thought that was going too. I was like, nope. Why did I just cry? I did just cry in a video game. I think it was for something happened in Mass Effect 2 and it made me cry. I was like, oh my God. Oh, it had something to do with Thane, which I don't want to give away, but I was just like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. I started crying. I was like, what the heck is wrong with me? But
I have cried while playing a game, but it's not really because of the game itself. And that was, I think I've shared it on here before, but it was the first Animal Crossing. I have been trying and trying and trying
to catch a bee.
No. I've been trying like forever to catch a bee, and I finally caught one. And the power went out before I could say.
Oh my God.
That's terrible.
Yeah. You just started crying.
I did. I just started crying.
Oh.
luckily, though, the thing with the catching the bee is like once you've done it, you've kind of learned how to do it. So I was able to catch another one within like another hour or whatever. But yeah, that's when I cried.
I think we all have Animal Crossing horror stories. I remember my best friend in Animal Crossing, Lobo, just left one day. Aww. And I was so sad.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I kind of liked in the DS one in Wild World, if you caught them in enough time, you could convince them to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one character, it was Stitches, the teddy bear. He tried to leave multiple times and
you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So no crying for you in games?
No, I have. I know Zelda has made me cry before. I'd say the end of Wind Waker did. Mm. But yeah, I don't know. I can't think of particular instances,
but it's happened. During Final Fantasy VII, the whole thing with Aerith? You didn't cry?
I was voting for Tifa.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
No, I love her though. I really do. No, that game did make me cry. I would say
that was sad. Yeah. That was the first time I cried in a video game that I can
Final
remember.
Fantasy.
Yeah, Final Fantasy does a way. Thing. It has a way. It's like, oh my god.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't cry during it, but Heavy Rain was the first game that kind of made me feel like a sense of dread. Like a really strong sense of dread. And that was like when your kid gets lost in the mall and you're looking for them and you can't find them.
Oh man, that is really
awful. It was really intense. Yeah.
So. That made me cry with all the action commands.
Too many. Zing.
Yeah, and everybody makes fun of it in this office. They walk around going, Jason.
Yeah, I didn't cry, but I was just like, I had to put it down. It really was that sense of, oh, I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, That game did a wonderful job.
Of messing with people's emotions.
Yeah. Next question comes to us from Josh. Oh, you know what? This is a WoW question, so we have to wait on that one too. Sorry, Josh. We'll ask it next week. Or following week, whatever. Next question comes to us from Ben. This is about Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2. He romanced Liara in Mass Effect 1. And he wanted to romance her in Mass Effect 2, but that wasn't an option. And he's saying that he basically wanted to be monogamous with Liara, but the game is sort of... I mean, you don't have to romance people, but the game is sort of sending you in the direction of romancing multiple people. And he wants to know what we think the kind of message that this is sending to young people, and are they conveying that the only way to truly succeed is to bang a different chick every time you step foot on a new Normandy?
Although, can I say though that you can be monogamous, for example, spoiler alerts, people don't write in. Like for example, I could have been loyal to Caden. Like you actually have that option to be loyal to your paramour, and then the Mass Effect 3, apparently, if you cheat on them or if you're loyal, it will change relationships. But I kind of thought that was interesting that it does give you options, and it's realistic. It lets you know how hard it is to be loyal. And I have to say that I was really mad when I first didn't get the comic for Mass Effect because I didn't download it properly, but that's a different story. Because I was like, I really want to romance Caden. And then I finally meet Caden on Horizon. It's like, this guy's a tool. I'm gonna go romance Garrus, which is
I did the same thing. I mean, and I romanced Caden in Mass Effect 1, but after I ran into him in Mass Effect 2, it's like, screw you.
Yeah, nice.
Whatever.
What's your problem? Like, Liara's all happy to see you. She's like practically crying. And then he's like, oh, it's you. And it's like, excuse me?
Yeah. All right. Excuse me. I died. I'm sorry I didn't call you.
Give me a break. Yeah, no kidding. Okay, I'm going to go romance either an insect or a lizard because either option is better than you.
This all sounds really realistic.
VanBioware's writing when it comes to romances in their games is so awesome.
But
it's interesting.
Dragon Age, I think, was better than Mass Effect in that regard.
Yeah.
At least with Alistair. Well, like, I loved the whole romancing with Alistair because he was so kind of like goofy and shy and doing things like giving you a rose.
Any of that picture is yours.
Yeah, the Alistair cologne that we have up on our fan art is so awesome. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting that the romance is better in a Dragon Age, whereas in Mass Effect, it's kind of awkward. Like Garrus is kind of like Alistair, but he's way more awkward. It's almost painful.
Yeah.
And Thane is really romantic, but he has this really awful tragic past. You're like, oh man. Whereas in Dragon Age, you've got such a good variety. You've got Morrigan, you've got Alistair, and I think the character's name is like Liliana or something, and Zevron. And I was sad you couldn't romance Sten though. I was upset about that. No one else was, but I was like, oh man. Yeah. But yeah. I don't think they're pushing you to cheat necessarily, but it's interesting because I think.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I never would have even thought of it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we got room for one more. This one comes to us from Victor. Victor is from the Dominican Republic. So his question is that he knows that Nintendo has lots of good games in Japan that don't come over here to the Americas, and he wants to know the reason why. Well, there are multiple reasons why that could happen, and a lot of it doesn't have to do with anything about the quality of the game. Mm-hmm. It just happens to do with whether or not the publisher thinks that they can sell over here.
Yeah.
And especially between here in the US and in Japan, there are huge cultural differences. That get in the way. So just for the same reason that Japan wouldn't be interested in something that's huge over here.
Yeah.
Most people wouldn't be interested in something that's huge in Japan. Yeah, so.
It's a real shame because people who don't import their games, you know, are missing out on some really cool games. I mean, I know this is the age old one people bring up, but Earthbound, you know, most people here haven't played it, which is a shame because it's a really awesome game, actually. So
and then there are the stories of the fantastic crossovers like Katamari. Like, was an import game, and it got such great word of mouth that Namco decided to release it here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really about the business and not the game. At the end of the day, they're not going to publish something over here that they don't think will sell.
Yeah.
Yep.
Alrighty. And with that, I think we're going to wrap it up for this week. Like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, next week is GDC. So there'll be lots of cool coverage going up on IGN, but we won't be here to record a podcast.
Yes, but that gives you more time to do your research and enter our little contest for both the Mass Effect and Dragon Age apparel and the Killzone 3
Army Men.
Yeah.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks so much for listening. As always, questions, comments, and feedback can be sent to IGNGirlFight@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/IGNGirlFight. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/IGNGirlFight. And finally, you can follow each of us individually on my IGN. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.